Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Hi, my name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Trainer of Champions. And right now we have our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hello. Yes, another rainy day in Pennsylvania. We've been raining for like a week now. We'll see this Sunday, say Tuesday. But we're here ready to talk about the world boxing scene. And there's lots of good fights coming up tonight. We'll be hitting on some of the numbers, too, and some other news as well. So, yeah, we've got a pretty busy show, I think, coming up today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, well, let's talk about something over there in Anthony Joshua's territory over there in England. A big wedding today on TV that got all the networks blazing. And congratulations to the royal couple over there. It's a beautiful wedding. Were you watching it, Bob?
No, I wasn't. I missed it. But again, I guess it's going, yeah, well, yeah. Is it over now then? Did they get married then? Is it done?
Yeah, they got married. It was beautiful. You know,
yeah, she's an American lass. Yeah, her Megan, she's from the States here, so yeah.
Yeah, Ron DeMeekin, man, yeah. To be African American and to marry into the royal family of England, that's a mark in history that's second to none.
Absolutely, no doubt. And, yeah, so big day over there.
It shows you that things are changing all over the world, Graspy, and love always keeps people together, and love brings people together. So we're just on the World Boxing Review Radio Show sending out some love all around the world. Love.
Very good.
Yeah, love. So what we got, Bob? There's a few things happening around the world. What's going on?
Before we get into the schedule, because we're going to start talking about a big fight over there in the UK tonight, but I do. This kind of was passing underneath the radar a little bit to some people, but you know, you're from this area, you know what this means, because all the bookies just went out of business this week in Pennsylvania, because the Supreme Court has struck down the 1992 law that prohibited sports betting, except in Nevada, and so as of this past week, sports betting is now legal throughout the United States. It's a question of whether or not the states, individual states, will have the option as far as getting into it or not. But what we do know so far is that New Jersey was the one who was behind this from the beginning, pushing it to the Supreme Court, and Pennsylvania is right behind them. So New Jersey and PA and Mississippi, they all have laws already in place so that, man, we could be seeing legalized sports betting very, very, very soon here in Pennsylvania. It's only going to be in the casinos, but it's going to be sports books, and you know, and it's a game changer, especially with these announcements now that we're talking about the boxing coming in. You know,
no more football cards or that floating around. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Well, I think the boys just go in legitimate business. They open gambling houses now. They have the opportunity to do legalize sports betting parlors. That's huge. You know, there was a gentleman down in Reading that had the idea of the sports betting places that started off in Pennsylvania. They used it for horse racing, where those horse racing parlors around the state that were set up. So this is going to make it huge. You know, you see those little Vegas-like parlors that got all the TVs where you can run up to the counter and bet. You know, it's something. It's a
nice. And it's an international thing too. There's the one agency, a big sports booking company out of London, actually is already getting involved here in Jersey and PA too. So it's going to be a big worldwide thing. And again, bringing it back to this whole boxing thing that we were talking about with the with Matchroom Boxing and the whole new thing with the streaming, the $1 billion deal. This is all just going to play right into it. It's going to be something to watch this unfold. It's going to be great.
Oh, absolutely.
And then, of course, today, speaking of betting on ponies, we do have the Preakness coming up today if it doesn't rain out. I don't know what the weather's going to be like down there in Baltimore area, but we'll see. Big fight down in Baltimore area tonight, too. We'll get to in just a couple of seconds as well. And we'll talk about some of the numbers of some of the fights from last week, too, after we get through the schedule. So let's begin tonight with the big game going on in Leeds tonight. That's over in the UK. It's Lee Lightning Selby. He's 26-1, got 9 KOs. He defends his IBF World Featherweight belt against unbeaten Josh Warrington, 26-0 with 6 KOs. Neither one of these guys have a lot of KOs, but it'll be a good fight. Two technicians going at it. We'll see what happens. Unbeaten super lightweight Jack Catterall, 20-0, defends his WBO Intercontinental super lightweight title against the 14-1 Mohammed Kani. And both Darren Tetley, 15-0, and Mason Cartwright, 13-0-1, vie for the vacant WBO European welterweight title. Also, Nicola Adams, she's 3-0, steps in with Soledad Belvaz Frias, 13-11-4, in a top female super flyweight tilt there as well. It's another big night at York Hall in London with the super lightweight battle between Kay Prosper, 11-1, and Nathan Weiss, 12-5-2, as the headliner. And 15-0, Paulie Upton, in a big light middleweight bout there. A lot of people looking forward to that one. Over in Birmingham, it's Ryan Kelly, 10-1, versus Owen Jawbern, 4-2-1, for the vacant Triple BFC Midlands area super welterweight belt. In Watford, English middleweight champ Elliot Matthews, 20-0-1, moves up to super middleweight to take on Lewis Van Poch. He's 7-69-1. Welterweight Jed Smith, 9-0-1, versus Ivan Lefvikits, 28-29, headlining the night there as well. Back over here in North America, the big fight is up at the Air Canada Center in Toronto, in Canada, where Adonis Superman Stevenson, he's 40 years old now. He's 29-1, 24 KOs. He steps back into the ring, but he hasn't fought in almost a year since basically last June. But he can still defend his WBC World Light Heavyweight crown tonight against Badou Jack, who's 22-1-2, 13 KOs. Also featured is the welterweight matchup between Michael Zuski, 30-1, 22 KOs, and Diego Gonzalez Luque, 21-5-1. An undefeated heavyweight Oscar Rivas, 23-0, 17 wins by KO, takes on Hervé Hubo, 29-2. And Patrice Volney, 10-0, battles Jacques Prater, 10-4-2 for the WBA NABA Canada middleweight crown. Sydney and Nova Scotia headlines their night with the Ryan Rosicki, 5-0, versus Vladimir Hernandez-Cezales. He's 20-13. That's a cruiserweight match. Here in the U.S., the focus will be at the MGM in Auction Hill, Maryland, down by Baltimore, where Gary Russell Jr., he's 28-1, 17 by knockout. He defends his WBC World Featherweight belt against unbeaten challenger Joseph Diaz Jr. He's 26-0 at 14 KOs. His younger brother, unbeaten bantamweight Antonio Russell, he's 10-0 with 8 KOs, takes on Esteban Aquino. He's 12-4 as part of that undercard. Mulvane, Kansas, will see Nico Hernandez, 4-0, 3 KOs, and Sylvester Canales, 14-7, vie for the vacant IBA flyweight title. Up-and-coming heavyweight Alexander Teslenko, he's 12-0, 10 by KO. He steps in with Terrence Marbra, he's 9-5. At the Meadows Racetrack and Casino in Washington in Western Pennsylvania, the main event will be the lightweight matchup between Bill Hutchinson, 15-2-4, and Angel Hernandez, 13-9-2. Davenport, Iowa, tops the card with the Jeremiah Williams, 8-11-1, versus Francois Russell, 2-27, heavyweight fight. Marietta, Georgia, will see light heavyweight James Jenkins and Nota Divine Nakahare doing battle, along with the middleweight match of Gundrick King versus James Hope. And over in Santiago de Cobrieros at the Dominican Republic, we have Camilo Prieto, 12-2, and Jose Anibal Cruz fight for the WBA Fedecentro lightweight belt. Quintana Roo, Mexico, will watch the champion Esmeralda Moreno. She's 35-10-1 with 11 KOs, defending her WBC World Female Light Flyweight title against Yesenia Gomez, who's 13-5-2. And that's the fourth World Female Light Flyweight title fight in the last 2 weeks. So we were saying last week maybe we'll see some unification happening down the road here as we shuffle through the women's light flyweight scene there. Morelia in Mexico will feature the battle for the vacant Mexico female minimum weight crown between Maria Soledad Vargas, she's 9-3, and Barbara Alejandra Martinez Munoz, who's 3-3. In Cancun, super middleweight, Maricela Cornejo, 10-2, will see action. While in Durango, it's Pedro Campa. He's 28-1 versus Uriel Perez, 16-3, in a super lightweight showdown. And going down into South America, in Goya, Argentina, that'll be the site where Erika Anabella Farias, she's 25-2, 10 KOs in the number one ranking in the world, defending her WBC World Female Super Lightweight belt versus Amelia Esther Reynoso, 10-3-3. Cordoba will feature the 29-1 with 26 KOs, Matias Carlos Adrian Rueda, battling fellow super featherweight Fabian Oscar Orozco, 27-7-3. Trelly will see unbeaten super middleweight William Skull, 7-0, stepping in with Martin Fidel Rios, 22-16-4. Buenos Aires highlights the super welterweight clash between Felix Fernand Vargas, 7-3, and Luis Alberto Vera, 9-13-1. Monteria, Colombia, we'll see Liliana Palmera, 28-12-3, 16 KOs, defending her WBA World Female Super Bantamweight crown in her hometown against Yasmin Rivas, 37-10-1. She has 10 KOs in there. Unbeaten lightweight Yia Solano, 12-0, 8 KOs, will also see action against Carlos Jimenez, 13-8-1. Iquique, Chile, we'll see two undefeated lightweights duke it out. As Christian Olivares, 5-0, meets up with Luis Claudio Cordoso da Silva, 3-0. Another big women's title fight taking place in Lima, Peru tonight, as Linda Laura Aleca, 13-2-2, defends her WBA World Female Super Flyweight title against Maribel Ramirez, 11-9-2. Catano in Puerto Rico will see the 10-round main event featuring the 28-1 with 24 KOs super lightweight Adrian Estrella stepping in against the 9-0 Subriel Matias. He has 9 KOs in there. And you might say, where's Estrella? Where has he been? Well, he has 9 suspensions dating back to 2010, and he's just coming off a 6-month one, too, that was imposed back in November. So he's coming out, but he's facing a very tough opponent in Matias. And actually, Matias will be favored in that one. Jumping back across the Atlantic in Cardiff, Portugal, it's the 9-0 Adam Silvera versus 8-8-1 Reed Manuel Pavanito. Valencia, Spain, is Mark Vidal, 11-1-4, 5 KOs, and Kiki Martinez, 38-8-1 with 28 KOs, fighting it out for Vidal's EBU European and featherweight belt. Adam Alagon, he's 7-0, defends his WBC International Silver Featherweight belt versus Emmanuel Lopez, 28-8-1. Christian Thon highlights the night in Barcelona, while in Madrid is David Sanchez at the top of the card. And in VAR, France, the welterweight title between Pierre Armand and Ayman Sawili ends the night. And we'll also have over in Rome, the elite lightweights Luca Popola and Shakib El-Kadimi battling. While in Milan, unbeaten Farouk Kubanov, he's 15-0, battles Devis Bosciero, 45-5-1, and that's for the EBU European Union super featherweight crown. While up the road in Brescia, the cruiserweight fight between Andris Bahui, 7-0, and Maurizio Lavaglio, 21-15, that's the headliner. Tuscany will see lightweights Catalin Ionescu taking on Antonio Hrvatic, while Montcalieri and Piemont will see Andrea Scarpa, 22-4, stepping in with Luka Leskovic. He's 5-22-1. Liege, Belgium, will win the Steve Jameau, 24-4-1, and Florian Cardos fighting it out for the vacant EBU European Union super lightweight title. Over in Charleroi, it's Timur Nakhachev, 17-2, 13 KOs versus Serhii Demchenko, 18-12-1, 12 KOs, and that's for the vacant IBO International light heavyweight title. Who's Vlaanderen? It will feature the super middleweight bout between Jamal Edin Mahute and Peter Calista. Paul on the beautiful island of Malta has Christian Chembri, 11-4, versus Richard Vela, 2-1, as its super middleweight main event. And Nardzin Poland features super middleweight Matusz Rzatkoz, 7-0-1, and Levan Lukaszewski, 8-2, going at it, plus Robert Porzeski, 21, 13 KOs, versus Jackson Jr., 21-9, 19 by KOs. That's a big light heavyweight bout. Over in Switzerland, Zug Switzerland will see Parmislav Opalak, 26-2, 21 KOs, defending his WBF World Super Middleweight crown against the 27-2 with 22 KOs Emil Markic. Trabzon, Turkey, That was the big night top with unbeaten Hussein Sinkara, 11-0, 9 KOs, and Yuri Bikatsu, 10-15-3, both seeking the vacant German International BDB Cruiserweight title. Also on the card is Fatih Kellis, 10-0-1 versus Maxim Tribunov, 8-3-1 for Kellis' WBO European Super Lightweight belt. And we have Firat Arslan, 41-8-2, defending his WBO Intercontinental Cruiserweight crown against Isaac Paakwisi Anka, who's 11-7. Out on the African continent in Rabat, Morocco, it's the battle for the vacant UBF World Super Welterweight crown between Khalid Hafshain, 7-2-1, and Pa'ata Vardwishvili, 33-15-2. New Plymouth in New Zealand, we have Sam Rapila, 16-4, and Ratu Dawai, 7-7-1, vying for the vacant New Zealand Professional Boxing Commission light heavyweight belt, while Tanya Reid and Clanita Hati both seek the vacant New Zealand Professional Boxing Commission female super featherweight title. In Manila in the Philippines is Alan Valispin, 11-2, defending his Philippines Games and Amusement Board super featherweight title against Warren Mumbuaganag, 11-9-2. And Iranio Similano, 15-8-3, defends his Philippines G&A Board super flyweight title. Over in Polomolok, it's Randy Patalkorin, 28-2-1 versus Jade Yakahan, 7-9-2. Bang Phuon, Thailand, will feature Kai Setafon, 17 KOs out of his 27-3 record. He defends his interim WBC Asian Boxing Council super lightweight title versus Acharya Wirosudanobo. He's 9-0 with 5 KOs. Malvern, Victoria, Australia, unbeaten Jason Maloney, 16-0, 13 KOs. Defends his WBO Oceania title against Bohe Kono, 33-11-1, 14 KOs. And that's a 12-round feature. And the WBA Oceania Super Flyweight belt will be defended by undefeated Andrew Maloney, 16-0, 10 KOs against the challenger Richard Claveras, 18-3-2, 15 wins by knockout. And the winner of the Terry Zuramanis, 19-3-3 versus Jacob McBride, 10-5 fight will be the Australia Victoria State Super Lightweight Champ. And the winner of the Adam Kadulis versus Dylan Borgero fight will be the new owner of the vacant Australia Victoria State Welterweight belt. And in Southport, up in Queensland, is Liam Parro, 13-0, 9 by knockout, fighting Sebastian Batiki, who's 11-0-1 with 8 KOs. And that's for the vacant WBO Youth Super Lightweight title. And this is a great place to go see a fight. The Guillotine Boxing Club in Cabell Tour, Queensland. Let's go over to the Guillotine tonight. And I just a big night. Matthew Hartman versus Brent Moore, middleweight matchup. And over in Shanghai, China, we'll end the night with the Jian Wang bantamweight feature. And a couple other things of note. Tomorrow, Sunday, in Tokyo, which is only a few hours away out there, we have Richi Taguchi. He's 27-2-2. He defends his IBF World Light Flyweight and WBA Super World Light Flyweight belts against the challenger Heki Budler, who's 31-3. We also have Hiroto Kayaguchi, 9-0, 7 KOs, defending his IBF World Minimal Weight crown versus Vince Palos, who's 13-0 with 11 KOs. And also this coming Friday night, May 25th, I want to mention also that Ken Shiro, he's the number one ranked light flyweight in the world, the WBC world champ. He's 12-0, 6 KOs, and he defends his crown versus Gannigan Lopez in Tokyo. Also on that card, we have WBA world bantamweight. Great title fight between the champ, Jamie McDonald, who's 29-2-1, 13 KOs. And he's taking on the super flyweight belt holder, moving up to the bantamweight class. That's Sayue Idue, who's impressive with 15-0 and 13 KOs. And there we go, Aaron. Let's look at the world. We had 27 countries this time around, man. I think that's one short of the record.
Hey, that's a lot of action. I'm with our historian, Henry Haskell. How do you do it? I'm with you, Henry. 27, man. And didn't even take a breath. My God, man.
There we go.
On the next thing of things, you know, that fight up in Canada, that's really something special with Bayou Jack. I wonder how the ticket sales are up there in Canada for that fight. him and Stevenson because...
Yeah, it's a big fight. They're doing it in the Air Canada Center. You know, that's the arena.
You know, these two are good fighters, but I don't think they can sell out 30,000. If they sell out to 30,000, I think some odd seat arena. I don't know if they scaled it down some, but that's a lot of seats. But I hope they do. You know what I mean? I hope they do. It's a great matchup fight, box against a puncher.
Stevenson. Stevenson hasn't fought in a while either, too. That's what we mentioned. He's been off since, you know, last June, too.
Yeah. And this is what makes it interesting. Can Jack, he box himself off and don't get hit with no big bombs? If he do, he goes on to win the fight pretty easily, I think. But it's going to be a good fight. You know, it's going to be a good fight, and that's something to watch on Showtime.
Speaking of Showtime, it's an interesting night. Showtime Boxing is covering three of the world title fights that we just talked about. It's covering three different countries, and it's going to start about 5 o'clock Eastern time here with the Lee Selby versus Josh Warrington fight taking place over there in Leeds. And then that's going to come back later on about 10 o'clock here for the Gary Russell Jr., Joseph Diaz Jr. fight. And then that'll be followed up by the Stevenson versus Jack fight. And they're going to be live streaming on Showtime Sports YouTube channel and the Showtime Boxing Facebook page as well. And so everybody's moving into the streaming thing and finding different ways to get the product out there, get as many eyeballs as they can on this. And this is an ambitious venture for Showtime to bounce between three different sites, three different countries. And while we're speaking about it, let me just toss out a couple numbers too. As of for last week's viewing, the Ali Munguia fight, talked about that kid last week. I was saying he was impressive for a 21-year-old man, but came out there and put a beating on Saddam Ali, who's been around and knew what he was doing. But they peaked out at $779,000 on HBO. And the big numbers from last week were the Lomachenko and Linares fight that pulled in $1.749 million on ESPN. So 1,749,000 people peaked while watching that one. And neither one of those fights lasted too long either, which is – so those are some good numbers. People were checking it out early, you know, and they did end. Now, we'll see what happens tonight, you know, as we mentioned, with the Showtime thing as well as the HBO fights too. So – there we go. It's an interesting night. Plus, we've been talking a lot, too, about all these female title fights going on as well, too. There's another four of them tonight, too. So, the world we go.
Yeah, well, around the world we go. And let me tell you something, Bob. It's great for the sport of boxing to get people watching again on fights. You know, what boxers have to do, they have to step up to the plate and hit the home run when it comes to being shown on television. And streaming is the way of the future. And we'll see how that plays out with Anthony Joshua. They're talking about that fight with him and Wilder coming to Las Vegas. If that happens, if it comes to the States, it's going to be huge. And the pay-per-view should go off the hook. But, Bob, without further ado, we have our very special guest. And we'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snowell and our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. But we have somebody that has a lot of young talent. He's up there at the National Golden Gloves tournament. Welcome, Lou Martinez. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Aaron. Great to be here.
Yeah. Hey, Lou, if we can ask you just move your mic or your phone or whatever a little closer so we can hear you. So we can get you real good because you got a lot to say, I know. So down there, and just give us a little bit about your gym and the Golden Gloves, Florida, before we move up there to the Nationals. Give us a little bit about that, a little background.
Okay, great. Well, I'm in West Palm Beach, Florida. We have a huge gym there where we get many kids off the street, inner city kids, and we have a great boxing program. You know, South Florida, the hotbed for boxing. We have the great weather year-round where we train year-round. So we always come up with a great crew to bring to the National Golden Gloves, you know.
Yeah, well, hey, look, I used to train way back in the 90s at your gym when we were moving from the police pal in Fort Lauderdale up closer to Deerfield Beach. And we used to train in your gym when we were Pompano Beach back there in them days, man, and you're still at it. You do a great job with the young talent in amateur sports and professional sports. And we'd like to thank you, Lou, for your commitment to the sport of boxing. You've been around the game a long time, and your program is solid. But you did have some of your young team. How many people were on your team that you took? Where was that, Nebraska? Omaha, Nebraska?
Yeah,
Right.
We're still here, actually. You know, we unfortunately, I had three going in the semifinals last night, and they all lost. This is a tough tournament, one of the toughest in the country. You know, for 5 days straight, these young men and women got to get up in the morning and weigh every day. This is the first year in many years that I don't even have anybody in the finals, which is tonight. And, you know, it's just the way the chips fell this time, you know. There's a lot of good talent here. Many of the cities here, of the other franchise from Golden Gloves, they have only one or two or three in the finals, you know. Nobody gets nobody really dominates.
Yeah, and, you know, Lou, to bring somebody to a huge tournament, people don't know. There's close to like 100 fighters that participate from all over the United States. And in a four-day period, they fight down to somebody winning in each weight class. You know, it's a heck of a tournament, and sometimes you have to fight, you know, a couple times a day, you know. And, you know, guys on the professional level train 10 weeks and have one fight. These guys got to fight as an amateur, you know, many nights to get to this result. And it's showing that your program's solid. Anytime you have people in the finals and quarterfinals and semifinals, man, it shows that you have them well prepared. Just to make it into that round with that many people to that type of level. But I understand it was a heavyweight that you had, a young kid. What's his name?
Yes, that was Gaspar Pierre from Miami area. He's from in Florida. He's, you know, he's actually pretty touted, doesn't have a lot of experience. This year, Florida, us, we brought a young team. It was you know, you come here and you match up with guys that have 80, 90, 100 fights, guys that have been fighting since they were 8 years old, you know. My team this year was kind of young, so but I'm proud of what they did and as far as they did. Like you said, it is a grueling tournament. Excuse me, all week long they have to, you know, get up early and make weight. And even after you fight sometimes, you don't just get to eat and gorge. You got to go maybe train a little more to make weight that morning, you know.
Yeah, it's a grueling test of endurance, skill, stamina, all the things that make an athlete super, and it shows, you know, to bring all of those guys that you bring from Florida up here and for all of them to participate and do that well, man, it's really something. But, you know, I know Nate Jones, who's been on the show here, he had a few guys. Owen Beck was up there. They had a few guys, and they were saying the same thing that you're saying, Lou, that the tournament's grueling. You know what I mean? It's just a test of will and endurance. Tell the young men to keep their heads up and keep training hard, and to make it to that level is an added plus, and they're doing a good job and they're doing a good thing. And tell them don't give up on their hope and their dreams. is that dreams do come true. You know, you work hard, and it takes a little time for it to happen. You know, and once it gets going, it's like one thing. Once they click, it just takes off like a rocket. You know what I mean? So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But how many coaches did you have with you, Lou?
Well, I bring three coaches. Most teams do bring two or three coaches, you know, because it's as well for us, the coaching is a hectic week because it's three rings going at the same time. Sometimes you have two fighters going at the same time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your gym down there, your gym down in Florida, I know, you know, you do a lot of community work down there, man. And I've been down there. I watched you do your community work to get the kids off the street and into the gym. Where can somebody, if they have money that they want to donate to a program like yours, where can they send it?
Well, that's for sure. We're always looking for help to keep the program alive, you know. We are in West Palm Beach, Florida. Our address is 2535 North Military Trail. We welcome anybody, you know, that can help us with the program. They can either call us, 561-833-2131 is our number. And any kind of help is great to keep this alive, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your next plans? What do you do next after a large tournament like this, Lou?
Well, we go back to Florida, and, you know, we try to put on local little amateur shows at least every other month, every 2 months. So I'll go back, kind of going back to the farm and, you know, cultivating our next crop, you know. These guys that were here this year and made it to the semifinals, even the guys that lost before that, they'll go back and stay motivated and you know, we'll just hit local tournaments, get more experience, and come back next year.
Next year. Hey,
yes,
Bob,
sir.
Any questions for Lou Martinez?
Oh, it sounds great. It's wonderful what you're doing. I was just wondering a little bit, you know, so you have these fights that are happening all the time. So you pretty much, these guys learn while they're in the ring is what I'm saying. And so you can always take that information back and show, like, how he lost, you know, kind of thing. So you got these guys that lost in the semifinals, and you probably really didn't have much information about who they were going to fight. So, you know, it's kind of like go in there and see where you're at. Is that how it works out?
Yeah,
learn from that.
That's this level of amateur, you know, you pretty much, it's not like the pros where you get some film on somebody and watch them. You're pretty much fighting a different style every day, so you just have to adapt.
Right. Yeah. Good. That's part of the learning process, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, a learning process, and it shows, Bob, you know, what a great job these coaches like Lou, they take these young guys and they teach them fundamental skills, boxing, how to handle a slugger, a counterpuncher, you know, a brawler. You know, they have a lot of work that these guys do to get guys ready for a tournament like this here. It's grueling. You know, people just don't understand. It just ain't about condition. It's about styles and all of that, all of those kind of things that come into play too. And you get a young man, he might not had a chance to spar with somebody or work on this style that this guy has. And now in a fight, he has to find some way, him and his coaches, to get him to make an adjustment, and that's difficult. And that's why it takes, you know, a while for these guys to mature sometime. But Lou and y'all do a great job doing it year after year after year after year with talent after talent, you know, getting them guys ready for tournaments like this. So,
we try our best, that's for sure.
Yeah. So what else do you want to promote that y'all are doing down there, if anything else besides another tournament?
Well, we'd like to, you know, I'd like to promote the brand of Golden Gloves. I think that somehow, some way, if anybody, you know, some kind of national chain can get involved and help promote the Golden Gloves. USA Boxing does a fine job of organizing all these tournaments around the country. And, you know, Golden Gloves has been around since 1923. We 30 franchise holders that run this thing together from all around the country, hold it together every year. It's a pretty big organization, organizational task to put all this together. And, you know, I feel that Golden Gloves, the name is Golden. We should be looking for some larger sponsorship and see if we can't get more fans involved. I think the fans are still missing out of this whole equation. You know, once they hear that the Golden Gloves went off, they're all saying, "Oh, I wish I was there. I wish I knew about it." We need to get the word out more to make this even larger program.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about funding and to get this thing going. Just recently, Al Bernstein, he got inducted into the National Boxing Hall of Fame when I did. He left from up here, went to his hometown, Chicago, where they have 90 foundations or 94 foundations, and he is the master ceremony speaker. He is. And, you know, we got to touch into resources like that that have them foundations and those big fundraiser dinners in order to fund some of these that money to a great program like the Golden Gloves and the program that what you're doing. And Florida is a hotbed for nonprofit fundraising. And here in the future, I'm going to see if I can tie you in down this to some of that network down there, that what's going on down there with a lot of big fundraising dinners. You know, y'all do a lot, man. You pull a lot of money out of your pocket a lot of times, man. Don't you tutor and stuff like that now, Lou? After school tutoring and stuff? But still do that?
Yeah, we have a whole program. We have a whole program. We're lucky that, you know, some of the teachers are members at the gym and then they want to give back. So they'll tutor kids left and right, you know, and help them out with their grades and all that. We, you know, as well as sponsorship, I think that some of the top boxers that have gone through our program, you know, alumni of Golden Gloves, they should look on how they can give back as well, not only monetarily. You know, they could give back their time and maybe just help promote the whole program and make it more visible so that we can get fans involved. You know, if we just fill the stadiums every time we did shows, that would be great in itself. You know, it's not like we're all only asking for everybody just a handout to give us money.
Right. Yeah, you know, the news at one time, like in Chicago, you had the newspapers that were involved, Philadelphia, California, the newspapers were involved with it. So when the Golden Gloves, when the tournaments were coming,
yeah, New York Daily News.
New York Daily News,
owned by the Chicago
Tribune. Same company.
And New York Daily News, they were all together. So together they ran a lot of the big shows in New York and in Chicago. I know that has slowed down a little bit, being that everything is less press, you know. But that's a great way to help out and sponsor.
Okay. All right. We have a boxing historian, Henry Trim, hanging in the queue for his segment. Is there anything you want to say, Lou, while closing?
No, man, I just want to thank you for having us on and letting us put a light on the National Golden Gloves organization. It's a great organization. If, you know, we just need to keep it going. And, you know, all the cities that came out and put this this final tonight, if anybody's in the Omaha, Nebraska area, come out to the arena and buy a ticket and support, you know, these local young amateurs.
Yeah, all the mutual funds and all of those insurance foundations in Nebraska and Omaha, I'm surprised that none of them really didn't
step up to the plate and be a heavy sponsor. We got to look into those things like that. But thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Lou, for coming on to the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Trainer of Champions and the radio aficionado, Bob Murray. Thank you so much, Lou.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Bob.
Without further ado, we'd like to welcome our boxing historian into the World Boxing Review radio show. How you doing, Tony? What's going on?
Who's Harry Treen? who's Harry Treen waiting in the wings? Who is that?
Hey, look, I knew that was going to get your attention. I knew you were going to come out screaming.
I'm going to come out swinging.
I know you will. Get the name mixed up.
I'm going to come out swinging.
It's all tied in. You know how it is.
Hey, you bet. I'm just messing with you. If that's the worst we do in this life, we got her made, my friend.
Yeah, man, a lot going on.
How are you, man?
We're doing good. I want to say our condolences to the family in that tragedy. I know I was talking to Tony yesterday. He was the first one to tell me about the tragedy, the loss of the young. And we want to send our condolences out to all the family in the schools, man. Ain't that something?
Yeah, that
another one.
I think I heard it was the 23rd school shooting this year. I mean, that's got to stop. That's just crazy. That's hard. You know, these young people go to school to learn, not to go to school to fight for their lives. I mean, goodness gracious, man. It's awful.
Yeah, it is awful.
But anyway, that's just, you know, let's get on a different note. You know, today we're going to talk about Sam Langford. Today we're going to talk about Sam McVay.
Yeah, Sam. Well, you want to do it, just Henry Trim, Harry Trim, Sam Langford. We're doing
Sam McVay.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
you got it,
if you can screw it up, I can screw it up. You know, I ain't gonna let you get ahead of me.
No. Talk about this great heavyweight that was around when Langford and Johnson and all of those guys.
McVay was he was one of the top fighters of his day, that's for sure. You know, I don't have a lot on him, so you know we're going to have to kill a little time here this morning. But Sam McVay was born on May 17th, 1884, and died December 23rd, 1921. Was a Hall of Fame heavyweight boxer who fought during the early 20th century. McVay ranked alongside Jack Johnson, Joe Jeanette, Sam Langford, and Harry Wells as the top black heavyweights of their generation. All of them, with the exception of Johnson, was denied a shot at the World Heavyweight Championship due to the color bar, which ironically was maintained by Johnson when he became the first black fighter to win the World Heavyweight Championship. Despite being denied a title shot, McVay enjoyed a famed career that took him across the globe. In 96 documented fights in at least 10 different countries, McVay only lost 16 bouts. His greatest wins included two victories over both Sam Langford and Harry Wells, which won him the World Colored Heavyweight Championship on two separate occasions, respectively. In his later years, he worked as a trainer and sparring partner for both black and white fighters, training for important bouts. Fighting out of Oxnard, California, McVay stood 5'10 and a half inches tall and fought at a weight of between 205 and 220 pounds. He relied more on brutal strength and fitness in the ring. He had his first pro fight in 1902 at the age of 18. In those days, few mixed race fights took place, so McVay frequently fought the other top black boxers of his time, including Sam Langford, 15 times, Joe Jeanette 5 times, Harry Wells 5 times, and Jack Johnson 3 times. Overall, McVay's boxing record was 65 wins, 16 losses, and 12 draws. McVay spent much of his prime years fighting overseas. He left for Paris in 1907 and fought there for 4 years. McVay left Paris in 1911 for Australia. He fought there for 3 more years before returning to the United States. On December 31, 1908, in Paris, Sam McVay competed in a mixed-style bout against jiu-jitsu expert Tano Matsudu, knocking him out in 10 seconds. In the early part of this century, such bouts were occasionally held in Japan, pitting Western boxers against judo and jiu-jitsu fighters. On April 17, 1909, in Paris, Sam McVay fought Joe Jeanette in a brutal contest, one of the greatest and certainly one of the longest of the 20th century. The fight went 50 rounds and lasted 3.5 hours. McVay was generally agreed to be winning through most of the fight, particularly in the 21st and 22nd rounds, knocking Jeanette down repeatedly. By the 40th round, however, Jeanette had recovered while McVay was lagging and knocked down repeatedly. Ultimately, McVay's eye had swollen shut and forced to quit. In 1912, McVay was one of the contenders for the World Colored Heavyweight Championship, fought at various venues across Australia. Sam Langford, his opponent, was a black Canadian, particularly known as the Boston Tar Baby, and repeatedly one of the greatest fighters of all time, beating champions in weight to heavyweight classes. Before the match, the boxers gave demonstrations of their skills. Prior to beating Sam McVay in the exhibition rink building in Paris, Sam Langford stayed at the Nedland Park Hotel, where he gave exhibition of punching the ball, throwing the medicine ball, and sparring. McVay contracted pneumonia and died December 23, 1921 in New York City. Penniless while still an active fighter, his burial and grave marker was paid for by heavyweight champion Jack Johnson. McVay was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 1999. Sam McVay.
Well, Sam McVay, you know, him and Joe Burnett, Bob, they fought up in Pottsville in Schuylkill County. You know that, don't you?
I forgot that, but now that you remind me, yes. How about that? Right, that's where the name came from, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
they fought in Pottsville.
Was it Jamaica or Pottsville?
Down in Pottsville. Down in Pottsville.
Oh, Pottsville, okay, yeah.
And Jack Johnson in Redding at the Roger, Jack did. So all of them guys had come through Schuylkill County, Bob.
Right.
In Pottsville.
Yeah.
when they were fighting these guys that Tony just was talking about. So
well, you know, there's only two fight films that I know of McVay, you know, out there, and they're on YouTube, of course. And the one of his fight with Jeanette is one of them, and the other one is Badlin Johnson, which doesn't demonstrate or show very much. But you know, people say that McVay had a very a vicious left hook, and I'm kind of curious as to how they come up with that, because there's very little film of him that I know of, I'll put it that way, that I know of. And the film that I have seen of him was more of a wrestling, you know, fighting the way they did back in those days, you know, the clinching and, you know, throwing of elbows and stuff. It's not, there was not the skill of boxing that you have today. So I don't know where they come up with the idea that he had such a great left hook. And do you, either of you men know anything about that? Or can you shed any light on that?
No, I can't shed no light on it unless it came from him and Jack Johnson putting on exhibitions or something like that. Maybe in
just newspaper guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of press like that, Tony? You know, like the newspaper guys saying, you know, he was knocking them out with a left?
Well, I'm only going, but, you know, the different various historians I've talked to over the years, you know, claim that, you know, he had a vicious left hook, you know. And excuse me for saying this, and I hope nobody gets offended by what I'm going to say. You know, if you've never seen a man fight, how do you know of his greatness? How do you know that he threw a left hook or a fish hook? You know, I don't understand how people, you know, make these, how great these fighters are, or this fighter was, or that fighter was. They've never seen him fight. You know, they hear that he was good. Well, hearsay, you know, is kind of funny, you know. Depends on who's saying it and to whose favor it is in, you know. I kind of take pride in the fact that I try to make sure that what I say is accurate. And right. That, you know, that I can back up what I say if challenged. But I just don't get some of these guys and you know, throwing stuff out there that, you know, it's not necessarily correct. You know, I just don't get it.
Yeah, and you know, him and Jack Johnson, they put on a lot of exhibition sparring matches because he did spar with
Johnson. Oh, you bet
they
did. Yes, yes. And you know,
and
another thing I found interesting is back in 1907 in Japan, you know, they were pitting prize fighters against judo and jiu-jitsu, you know, like we do today against MMA and UFC, and yeah. Victoriously the prize fighter comes out ahead in against judo and jiu-jitsu, as do a prize fighter against MMA and UFC. I find it kind of unique that way back then it was even doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
A long time, even with the Chinese Boxing Rebellion, they were doing that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They were fighting people with boxing and karate and kung fu and all of that. Different sciences,
mm-hmm.
different terminology of the way they think or what you can do with the punch. You know what I mean? So it was really something. It's something to watch.
Well,
you know, like Muhammad Ali's day, Bruce Lee, they used to compare Bruce Lee, you know, all of those different types of things. And then the wrestling guy, Ali, fought the wrestling guy, and he laid on his back and tried to swipe Ali's feet away from him and kick him, you know?
Right.
And
yeah, I remember
Jack
that.
Was over
but there's
in
no
France.
Trickery in boxing.
No.
There's no trickery in boxing. You know, jiu-jitsu and judo, you know, there's a lot of trickery in that. You know, there's no trickery in boxing. If you throw a punch, there's no trick to it. You know, you're throwing that punch. You know, throw it by mistake. You know, accidentally throw it. You know.
There's no mistake. It's what Nino seconds. You know, there's a lot of science in it. Your Nino seconds from being flat out on the deck, or your Nino seconds from standing up with your arms over top of your head. And the reason
being
I say that, you're an engineer, and you know, protons and neutrons and velocity and all of that kind of stuff. In the highest science to the game.
You ate your Wheaties this morning, didn't you, champ?
Of course, I got this. I have to take these with you, Tony. You keep me sticking in. You know, like they say, like Boudini Brown used to say to Ali, stick and move, champ. Hit and don't get hit.
That's right. Well, that's the key of boxing, you know, to strike and not get struck. You know, that's the main key of the sport. You know, a lot of people misunderstand our sport. You know, they think that, you know, you're not knocked out, and you don't have blood flying and everything. You know, it's not a good fight. But that's not necessarily true. You know, you don't go in a fight to knock someone out, you're going to fight to win. You know, it's really a science, and it's more mental than it is physical. And you know, people don't understand that. You know, it's just really a mental chess game more than anything. You know.
So McVay, where does he stand in the heavyweight division? You know, with with the rest of the greats, where you, when you talk about Jeffries and, you know, Sharkey, Joe Louis, and, you know, the whole bit of Rocky Marciano.
He's right there with them. McVay's kind of forgotten, but, you know, people like you and Bob and, you know, people that, you know, that are into boxing and know boxing, of course, don't forget him, but have not forgotten him. But, you know, he was really a tough opponent, and he won the colored heavyweight championship twice, and he ranks right up there when it comes to being with the greats, you know, Joe Jeanette and Harry Wells and Jack Johnson and Lewis and Dempsey and, you know, all those, you know, he'd rank with them, and if he was fighting today, he would be a champion a long time.
Yeah,
nobody
guys
could beat him today.
Well, they were brutal. The rounds that they fought was second to none. Most of these guys couldn't make it to the 14th, 15th round.
Well, 40th round.
or 50th, you know.
Oh, he got tired
in
the
40th
round. It's like, okay.
You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, some experts say the longest fight in the history of boxing is 72 rounds. And other sources say that it was 124 rounds. Can you imagine somebody going 124 rounds or 74 rounds today?
No.
You know, let alone, you know, they have a hard time doing 12. I mean, I'm old school, of course, as everybody knows, you know, and I wanted to go back to 8 weight classes. I want to go back to 15 rounds, you know, for championship fights. You know, the championship rounds are from the 12th through the 15th, not from the 10th to the 12th, you know.
Tony, those three extra rounds, man, it makes a world of,
oh, yes,
you
sir.
Know, you'd be
yes,
surprised.
Sir.
Guys can go 10, 12, but that extra three rounds, they just can't make it.
I know. That separates the champions from the contenders.
Yeah. And guys used to say it's that span of time of endurance of the body where
yes.
Your output of energy for a whole hour is different
mm-hmm.
than 45 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Just the extra three rounds, it puts a toll on the body. And only those...
Ooh.
Great champions can push themselves over that limit, you know?
Yes.
It's really something. And
oh, absolutely. It is. And, you know, I didn't say it. I didn't mean it, you know, that it was, you know, it was a walk in the park by doing that. I understand it takes a special man to be able to endure that them extra three rounds. I get that. But that is what, when we had the 15-round championship fights, that's when we had real champions. You know, and real, you know, it was different. You know, and the young guys today don't understand that, you know, they say, you know, I live in the past. Well, maybe I do, you know, and, you know, for me to come up to modern times, well, I have come up to modern times, and I prefer what happened in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and 60s. More so than what I like about what the boxing is today. I feel that the fighters of the past, if they were fighting today, then nobody would beat them. You know, they fought for their life back then. You know, they put beans on the table. You know, they didn't fight for $1 million, you know, multi-$1 million, you know.
Yeah, a real purpose and a reason. Okay, we got 40 seconds, Tony. 40 seconds.
Sam McVay was probably one of the greatest fighters of his day. He was well respected. He was revered and a tough fighter. And he fought the best of the best and was victorious 90% of the time. He only had 16 losses out of 96 fights, and he had 12 draws. He was a great fighter of his day, and he would be a champ of champions today.
Okay, 10 seconds. Bob, in closing.
Well, that's it. Very good. Thank you again for coming on, Tony. Nice to hear you always. And, yeah, great show.
Yeah, we'd like
to thank you, Bob.
Thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell, the trainer of champions, and our radio aficionado, 27 countries strong, Bob Murray, man, and a great historian, Tony Trim. Thank you, Tony, for a great outlook on Sam McVay. Thank you for tuning in. Same time next week.
All right.